Welcome to Talking Up Music Education, a podcast from the NAMM Foundation. The NAMM Foundation is working to assure that all children have the opportunity to learn and grow with music, and that music is part of daily living for everyone. Talking Up Music Education podcast shares news and stories about music education from teachers, students, parents, school, and community leaders who care about music education and are working to create more opportunities for music learning. And now, here's your host, Mary Lurson.
I'm so delighted to welcome Nola Jones to Talking at Music Education, the NAMM Foundation podcast. Nola, what's your official title?
I'm the coordinator of visual and performing arts for Metropolitan Nashville Public Schools.
So you have the whole gamut.
I do.
You have music education, arts education. Is there some dance and theater?
Dance, theater, visual art, and music.
Share with us how you came to be in Nashville, knowing that this is not the first time you've been in Nashville.
Right.
But tell us your career journey.
Well, I'm a music teacher, and I'm a child of two music teachers. So it's been an exciting, circuitous somewhat pathway. I was teaching in Nashville Public Schools when I decided to go back and work on my doctorate. And really, life is what gets in the way of your plans sometimes.
Right, right.
So I went to the University of South Carolina and worked on my doctorate. And then as I was leaving, completing the classwork there, I was offered a position in Arizona at Northern Arizona University in the collegiate ranks. And so.
And you were the college band director?
Yes, I'm an associate director of bands at Northern Arizona. And then I came back to Tennessee to be the director of bands at the University of Tennessee at Martin.
All of which we have to just add is a bit of a pioneer. You know, you were parting the snowbanks for a lot of women to follow. Am I right? Maybe you didn't feel that way.
My mom was a band director.
Right.
So I kind of feel like that, you know, that she kind of did that a generation before I did.
Right.
But yeah, in the collegiate ranks, there are more now than there were 10 years ago.
Years ago for sure. Mm-hmm, so yeah. We just have to kind of acknowledge that, right?
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
absolutely.
It wasn't like a natural, because of your mother, maybe it felt more natural and you had the confidence naturally and it just felt right for your life. But for many women, this has been sort of like, well, that's another world over there. Mm-hmm. I can't necessarily, but you just forged into that creative space.
And truly.
Yeah, it was the right space for you.
Well, fortunately, I had really strong women mentors who were successful. And actually, one of my colleagues is someone who kind of led me to Nashville in that way, because she had been the state president of TMEA and had been really active at the national level and had her own band program here in Nashville. And so I kind of felt like when I made that decision in the early 90s to come here that maybe that trail had already been blazed in this state. Tennessee's been fairly progressive.
Well, it's a great example, too, that, you know, women do and should nurture and help other women, too.
Oh, we have to.
Right. I mean, it's just as a quick aside, not necessarily on talking about music education topic, but it is part of how, you know, very important for us to take that investment and very seriously.
Well, I think we all have an obligation to nurture the next generation of underrepresented colleagues in our field, period. If you look at the number of Hispanic teachers, for instance, of music teachers, I would geographically, there's a larger percentage probably in South Texas. But in Nashville, it's one of the fastest growing populations that we have, but our teaching faculty does not represent that diversity or that growth. And so I feel like it's incumbent upon me in this position to actively seek and then nurture and protect those colleagues while they find their way.
And it's a message for our higher ed audience too, right?
Absolutely.
Who are bringing students, music students into their programs and nurturing them through the process of becoming good pedagogues.
Absolutely. You know, we saw that in Phoenix. We had a large Native American population. And we didn't have a large Native American population of teachers. So what are we doing to actively recruit minority underrepresented teachers into the classrooms? I feel like the teaching profession should represent the diversity of the children who are in our classrooms.
And it boils into this discussion about diversity, which as a nation we have. Right?
Yes,
I mean, welcome to the biggest topping of the planet here. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think well-informed, ethical, smart, forward-looking organizations mm-hmm. do this work deliberately and thoughtfully and say, we have a plan to at least constantly review, investigate, expand, right? And
yes.
I think it's very conscious for your work now. Mm-hmm. But we left off at coming back to Tennessee,
yeah,
right, in the college.
Yes.
That was an important little diversion. So we came back
sidebar.
And
yeah.
stayed with the college, mm-hmm. college music teaching.
Well, I had just gotten tenure at UT Martin when I got a phone call from Jay Steele, who's the chief academic officer of Metro Nashville Public Schools.
He's a wonderful guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
so smart.
All excited.
And a music
mm-hmm.
educator.
And a music, former music educator, absolutely. He was all excited about this new initiative called Music Makes Us in the Metropolitan Nashville Public Schools and invited me to come for an interview to talk about the possibility. And honestly, Mary, again, I never would have charted that path for myself, but it was just, I have such a passion about urban music education. If we don't provide quality music education for every child, you know, what's going to happen to the next generation? What really?
Because not just what will happen to them musically, but
no.
what will happen to them as whole people.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely.
I took
yes,
the words
I agree.
Out of your mouth.
Yeah, you did. No,
I think we understand that but there's a lot at stake here.
Absolutely. And you and I are pretty good about finishing each other's sentences on where the basic keystones of our philosophy are concerned. We're in alignment. We knew that the first conversation we had.
So you knew that this opportunity, though there probably could have been a lot of other fulfillments mm-hmm. in the higher ed side of all of this, but it was just like, whoa, this is a chance to really go where there's something groundbreaking occurring.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I really feel like that we have an opportunity to be a flagship for the rest of the country with regard to what possibilities public-private partnerships can bring with regard to all of the arts education, not just music.
Right.
You know, because the public school systems don't have the resources to do everything. And so we have to be creative about ways to partner. And what better in Nashville?
And the city of music.
Exactly.
Right.
Music City USA.
Right.
And when you start looking at your natural resources, that's one of our resources. So we have to leverage that in a way that provides music for all of our children.
And wouldn't you say too, though, that there was a convergence of school leadership at the same time? I mean, we know the mayor, the city leadership, but you know, for music and arts education, visual arts, for it to really come to scale for all children, mm-hmm. it has to be a central pillar in the school district itself, right? I mean, have you found that it has been essential and it's been true here?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And the good thing is I don't think it's been top-down leadership. There have been pockets of greater support in some schools, and a lot of that has to depend on is related to the differentiated needs of every student population in the building. Not every building in our district looks the same. When you have 150 schools, they look different. And so principals' job responsibilities past the basic Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Right.
But when you get past that with regard to education, what they need in their building can look a little bit different.
And site-based management is all the rage.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's part of the right. sort of the fabric of it mm-hmm. now.
We call it autonomy, but it's
right.
what you and I know is site-based
right.
management.
Right.
Yes, of course. And we try to do that with our teachers, too. And some of the grant funding that we've achieved is to give them voice and choice in what they need. They're the music specialists. I wouldn't presume to go in a classroom and prescribe what a teacher needs.
So it's how you create a standard and yet not a cookie cutter.
Exactly.
Right? So
mm-hmm.
there's flexibility and creativity mm-hmm. within sort of a continuum of these things we would like to have be achieved by all children.
Mm-hmm.
Now go and create a creative plan to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a fair way of assessing it?
Oh, I think that's a great way to say it. And, you
yeah.
know, it's about giving them voice and choice, but also we want it to be rigorous and flexible.
Mm-hmm. So well put. How many children in the district? Give us a
today
a scan of the district, and how has it changed over the years? And you've been in and out of Nashville, mm-hmm. right?
I mean, yes.
How
mm-hmm.
has it changed? How has Nashville changed?
Yeah, we have about 87,000 children in the district now. And what we're seeing is that not only has our student population grown, but we have a percentage of EL students where English is not their first language, has grown dramatically. And to try to address those needs, we've certainly made that one of our goals. And we're going to look at that, I'm sure, more when we do our next 3-year strategic plan. Mm-hmm. The other thing we're seeing is that more of our children come from impoverished backgrounds. We're about to an 80% rate district-wide. And with that comes increased mobility. Some places have a 40% mobility rate.
I mean, the kids aren't there mm-hmm. part of the year, or they leave for part of the mm-hmm. year and then come back.
Mm-hmm. When, wow. you know,
that's
leases
a lot,
come.
40%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would venture to say that it probably relates to maybe the Clark County, Las Vegas mobility, maybe Miami or Tampa, you know, any large city where you have a large immigrant population.
Mm-hmm. And families are moving. Mm-hmm. And there's just not a consistency mm-hmm. in neighborhood or in schools.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So how is that different than Nola Jones in Nashville the first years?
You know, it's remarkably different. When I was teaching in Nashville before, I was in kind of a little bedroom community, Donaldson. And you taught the siblings of the students who came 4 years before. And
back in the day.
Yeah.
And, kind of a back in the day.
Yeah.
You know.
But it doesn't seem like it was that long ago, Mary.
No.
You know, I guess it is. I've moved frequently enough that I haven't taught the children of some of my students yet. So,
yeah.
But no, it's very different in that respect. The increased mobility rate, the rate of, and I don't mean to say that we don't have parental engagement, because we do, but the high immigrant population has been very impactful on mm-hmm. the district, and it's forced the district to look at how we're providing for the needs of all of our children.
And this is issues that are present in districts large and small now in America. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is part of our national policy in education, regional, state. I mean, it's just it's a new reality. You know,
but the good news is,
I think there's mm-hmm. good news in all of it.
Oh yeah, you know? Absolutely. Right. But the great news is, as you well know, in the Prelude study that we did, our recent research study that NAM helped support, our data shows that when we get these children involved in music and they stay in music, the longer they stay in high school, the more successful they are. Mm-hmm. And when you break it down by ethnicity, it's even more remarkable.
Well, the children that have the greatest sort of need in all of those areas, it gives them a pathway.
Absolutely.
And many, many other things as well.
And anyone who might be interested in that study, it's on the musicmakesus.org website.
And I remember you launched that study you were on our panel at Midwest
yes.
Clinic
mm-hmm.
2 years ago, was it?
I think so, yeah.
Well, a lot of changes happening fast.
Quickly.
So you're start of year 4, too, mm-hmm. just like you and Lori mm-hmm. came in the same year. What are your hopes for the program? You say you really feel like you're making some impact. Mm-hmm. Lori went through and told us some of the measurement that's occurring, mm-hmm. the statistics. What else? What are your hopes for the program? What are you feeling and seeing?
Well, I can give you some small pieces. I think one of the things that we've done that's been really impactful, our world percussion classes, where we have all 100% EL students. Those are making remarkable impacts. One of the students who was in that class just got accepted to Berkeley.
Hmm.
So we're seeing not just statistics, but we're seeing faces and names and children. And that to me is the most compelling. We're seeing, I think, you know, a buzz creates a buzz and a rising tide raises all boats. We've managed to get some facilities that were just really inadequate addressed within the district. We've managed to hire more teachers. We've embedded music in our curriculum with greater fidelity and greater consistency. One of the things that Dr. Steele is really working to do is vertical alignment from elementary to middle to high. And then I think the next research study that we're about to release will point out some places where we have some gaps that we're going to need to analyze and create strategies around how to ameliorate those gaps.
So you're always looking, studying, Assessing, yeah. Well, in addition to hiring teachers and supporting teachers and managing curriculum.
Well, the one thing we know about education is that it always changes. Right. And if we don't change with it or anticipate those changes, you're doing triage instead of preventative care.
You know, one thing that I feel so strongly about, and I've actually feel more strongly about as I grow older, is the role of general music in the curriculum. And I know you've had a real impact in supporting the sort of revitalization of the general music curriculum as part of Music Makes Us Here. Can you tell us about that and what's happening in every elementary school classroom, almost every, hopefully?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have music in all of our elementary classrooms, and that's what's really exciting. And fortunately, because of the generosity of the CMA, we have ORF instruments where they're needed in almost every classroom. Teachers receive training, ORF training, and the district pays for it in the summers, and then we are able to provide the instrument. Our curriculum is heavily ORF-centric and recorder and all of the things that you would expect. But then the other thing we've really tried to do is provide for that teacher's specialized skill set. Mm. So if you look at Kim Folsom's classroom at Lakeview, she's a percussionist. So she's doing a lot of percussion, and we've been able to provide instruments to help support that. If you look at another classroom where the teacher might be heavily keyboard savvy, then we've worked with the H1 to provide grants so that they could have keyboard labs like we did in Anaheim. Mm-hmm. So those are the things that we've tried to do to leverage the teacher's strengths, their strong areas, rather than prescribe a curriculum that would limit their ability to be flexible. We want them to teach the concepts, the overarching concepts within that framework, but they're not married to that daily, exactly. We don't prescribe exactly how that should look.
Because a creative teacher needs to be creative.
Oh, the last
thing.
They
need to know that they can come in that day and take what their individual passion and expertise and make it part of that plan, right? And then it's magic.
Exactly. And
it's magic.
Principals are seeing that magic. We're seeing it in their programming. It's just, but when you don't have resources and you don't have the support at the administrative level and you don't have the scheduling and they're teaching off a card, it's hard to be creative in those with those constraints. So my job is to remove the fetters and let them run.
So let's talk about the administration. Mm-hmm. Dare we?
Sure. Absolutely. You bet.
You know, because how many principals do you work with?
About 150.
About 150.
And that's not counting the assistant principals.
And assistant principals, mm-hmm. we might double that number mm-hmm. then. And then you have guidance counselors mm-hmm. and scheduling gurus and other people that take care of all those things. So is it a process, too, of bringing them along? I wouldn't assume that they're all right, you know, in the end zone with you, that this is the best thing, maybe better than year one they were there. Mm-hmm. But do they understand? Is to the administration, to a large percentage, really seeing the benefit and the value in the curriculum for all children?
I think if I'm completely honest, we're making a lot of progress in that area. And so much of it is built on personal relationships. When they have job openings, I'm heavily involved in that process, as involved as they will allow me to be. When they hire great teachers and they see that it's beneficial, that these are not only teachers that are effective in the classroom, but they're effective in the culture of the building. You know, I always tell my new teachers, you're part of a team and you work on that principal's team and you work at the pleasure of the principal in that building. So make yourself a linchpin. If they remove you, everything falls apart.
So immediately, let's say in the hiring of a teacher in a building, you become the ally of the principal because now you're a resource for the principal to get it right.
Absolutely.
To get it as perfect as it possibly could be in terms of a match of a teacher. So, I mean, listen, anyone that would do that for me, mm-hmm. I would be their friend for life.
Well,
so, I mean, then talk about, you know, relationships and that you come in as a professional and you say, all right, let's consider what's the best for the building, the best for you. What are your goals? I mean, that's part of the success, right?
Well, unfortunately, our human capital department is, very visionary as well. And so rather than to say, we want you to give us a prescribed list of approved music teachers, we even go a step further to say, let me send you 10 resumes. I've gone through all 150 applicants. And for this job at this school, start with these 10. And then if you don't like those 10, if they're not three that you want to interview out of that 10, then we'll send the next 10. And then that list of 10 teachers might look different if a principal for Kim, I'll go back to Kim Folsom. If this principal says, you know, I really want to have oral percussion infused in this, then I can say, well, wow, these are the 10 applicants that have that skill set. So we create trust and relationships.
Yeah, I'm really going back to the relationship here. I mean,
that's,
you know,
what it is.
I mean, the fact that, again, I say, you know, to have a principal that's responsible for all the instruction in the mm-hmm. building, have someone that can come in and really help, mm-hmm. you know, help make this as successful as it could possibly be. So based on that model, I bet you're making great progress.
We are.
Right? I mean, let's mm-hmm. face it. You know, this is the knitting together mm-hmm. of people and needs and opportunities. And if you go forward in with the attitude, how can I help? Let's make this the best it possibly could be. Kind of, I have an agenda, which is great for great music education, mm-hmm. but I share the same agenda for great instruction for kids. Let's put our resources together. So.
And some principals go about it a little bit differently. They have a little bit different process. They may go through all of the applications and interview three, and then they'll call me and say, I'm down to these three. What do you think? And then we'll kind of go at it from that direction. It's kind of differentiating. Again, it's all about if you can provide what people need, then they learn to trust and then they value what you bring and offer and share. And then hopefully they see improvements and everyone's getting what they need.
And we could take this little soundbite and it would pretty much apply to everything in life, but it's true.
Buying
right?
a house, right? Buying a church, right? Whatever.
Right?
Yeah, anything.
Right? I mean, getting good service from someone who's mm-hmm. cleaning your, you know, fixing your washer. I mean,
yeah.
you create this. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, it's like, this is, kind of, you know, building a great program goes to back to some pretty strong basics.
Well, children are people.
Right.
They're not statistics. They're not chess pieces. They're people. And if we look at this as a people industry, then, and teachers are people.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and principals are people.
All living complex lives.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, let's face it. So you've also been involved with hiring some new teachers. Mm-hmm. I'm very interested to know, from your experience, your many years of professional and your esteem in the field, Nola, you must know how you have colleagues all over the world, people, you know, you can't really go to a conference with Nola Jones and expect you'll talk to anybody because they all want to talk to Nola, which is wonderful. But, you know, how is this new music educator entering the field? Who is the new music educator? Is there a persona for the new music educator different from, say, your training and how are they adapting to this opportunity here in a complex urban school district?
I think the new music educator is technologically more savvy, perhaps, not perhaps, I'm sure they are. They grew up with computers, the next generation of music teachers. If you read about trends in music education or in any education field, the days of walking into a classroom and sitting down and have a professor talk to you or speak to you or, you know, do a presentation for the next hour, with virtual learning, those opportunities, we're going to have to be creative, especially in a performance environment, how we're going to meet that challenge. I think that the next generation of music educators will need to be maybe a little bit more open to other content areas, because music education is changing somewhat. That doesn't mean that you have to be able to teach band, choir, orchestras, general music, world percussion, gamelan.
Right. You don't have to do
right.
it all. Right.
But I do think that because of the changing landscape of music education, we are going to need to be more responsive to what our class will look like.
And I guess what I'm sensing is that the a sense of, you know, kind of music teacher to music teacher collaboration on mm-hmm. content.
As opposed to
this is my program, I'm building it mm-hmm. on, as opposed to, wow, I have all these diverse mm-hmm. learning opportunities in my students. Let's put a team together or teaching artists mm-hmm. together that are building on my curriculum because it can meet all of these opportunities as opposed to just what I can do. Because I think in my training, we came up pretty rigid. You know,
we did, Mary.
We had to go right into a slot. Now I think the training and what we know about learning, too, is broader. And the tools to learn are so broad that, you know, that the view of what you become more of a manager, actually, than a teacher. You're managing learning opportunities. It's in addition to also, like, teaching, you know, top down. So.
And my fear is... We don't want to breed a next generation of jacks of all trade and masters of none. Right. We've got to make sure that we provide the support and the sustainability and the professional development for these teachers to be able to do this work while they're managing classrooms and while they're, you know, learning the landscape of how to be successful in a public education environment. Mm-hmm. But I will say they're no less passionate. They're no less committed. I think it's harder now to get a music education. I mean, we're billing it as a four-year program. It's not. Ask any college music, junior music major, how many hours they're taking, how many ensembles they're playing or performing in, and how many credit hours they're getting for those. I mean, my dean at UT Martin used to say that our students are more overworked than the pre-med students. So it's not easier.
Our expectations are high.
They certainly are.
To be credentialed and to meet the licensing requirements.
And in Nashville, we're very committed. Music education specialists. We're all about integration in the classroom and crossover. But in those music positions, we want music education specialists.
So again, as we wrap up, from your vantage point of great accomplishment in the field, significant leadership and being admired by so many. If I would say, Nola, what is the state of music education? What would be the first couple of words that would come to your mind?
For me personally, it's exciting. I think we're at a real crossroads in music education. Teacher evaluation is going to change nationally. I think there's a national trend toward valuing teachers and evaluating arts teachers on what's going on in the arts classroom and not the standardized test scores in the building. And if we don't move that way, we're endorsing the belief that what we do doesn't matter. Our teachers are taking that development and that evaluation model and using it for professional development. They're learning to collaborate. Technology has made it so easy for them to share. And there's so many more resources for great recordings, great videos. You know, you have access to tools that you didn't have when you and I were, you know.
No kidding.
So it's exciting. I think there's some challenges that we didn't face. We talked about those earlier, but we just have to find creative ways to reach children. Music will be the vehicle. If you can get a child involved and excited about any one phase of making music, I hate to use the term gateway drug, but let's just call it a bridge to something wonderful. That's not
it's the best addiction there is.
It's a connection, and not only that, they'll be lifelong lovers of music. And they may not play in a symphony orchestra professionally, but they'll buy a ticket and go support the arts in their community.
And their life will be different in every way, as we've seen.
It will enhance the quality of their lives.
Every part of their life. Nola, I'm so grateful for the time to chat with you.
Always.
But I am most grateful for all that you're doing for music education and that you're here. And that, you know, the phone rang and you picked up to realize that this should be a big part of this time of your career. And we'll be seeing you around the country, if I can grab a moment to wave, as your fan base pursues you.
No, so. I think that shoe goes on the other foot, Mary, because we're very grateful for you. And you have been with us since the very beginning, since day one. And I'm not sure that we would be where we are today. I know we wouldn't without the support of Mary and Nam. We're so grateful.
Thanks. And thank you all for joining us on this edition of Talking at Music Education. And we sure hope you join us next time. Thanks, Nola.
Thank you.
Talking Up Music Education is a podcast created by the NAMM Foundation. To learn more about how you can support music education in your community or how you can be part of the work of the NAMM Foundation, visit our website, www.namfoundation.org, or join us on Facebook at facebook.com/NAMM Foundation. You can also follow Mary on Twitter at Mary LNAMM.